Hi there, and welcome to the Og Blog Podcast, the leading podcast for fans of Peanuts and Peanuts books, because no one else cares quite as much, I suppose. Well, there's some other people who care. I don't know. I've got the microphone. Thanks to Og Blog reader Scott, I am lucky to get a chance to meet Stan Pawlowski, a sculptor who's done some noted works with Peanuts. Hello, Stan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, and yourself?
Great, great.
How did you first get hooked up with Peanuts?
Well, I myself have always enjoyed the strip. As a younger person, non-professional sculptor, my cousin kind of introduced me to the characters, and I was starting to sculpt them using water-based clays on the weekends while my daughter was just a little baby about 47 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
And never thought that I'd ever get the chance to meet Charles Schulz, but I had been doing some other sculptures. I was a manufacturer for Van Cleef & Arpels, making jewelry for them, and I was doing work for Disney. And someone got a hold of me and invited me up to meet Charles Schulz, and I felt I had to go.
That's an opportunity you do not say no to.
Yes, and very fortunate that he took the time to sit in on a meeting, and he invited me right in the middle of the whole thing to go with him to lunch. So the person I was with had to rearrange making some flights for that afternoon. He just said, go, go. And Sparky, which is Charles Schulz's nickname, as you all know, he and I walked around his ball field there for probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours before we actually went over and had lunch at the Warm Puppy. And he was asking me about how I went about, you know, making sculptures. And I was telling him I was not a very good businessman and that I don't do projections of what something may cost. I just try to do it with quality the way that I want to. And it has to, you know, bear that cost, and I try to keep it also down for the collectors. And I was so inspired from that first meeting that I came back and I did five small little concepts and returned for another meeting with him. Mm-hmm. And he was amazed. He told me, and he wrote me several letters afterwards, he said this should be the quality of my characters, and he felt that I had taken them from a 2D into a 3D like no one ever had.
Well, that is tricky to do, because those characters, they really don't exist in 3D on the page. If you look at the different angles, they're not consistent.
Right.
Any angle, they look wonderful, but...
And Charlie Brown and all those characters are even harder to do than Snoopy, because you get an egg shape looking at them one way, and then you get a real round looking at it from the front. So I actually asked Bill Melendez how he did it.
Oh, okay. He had to rotate them.
And he kind of says, well, I can get away with it because I'm doing animation, but if you'll ever really look, I make their heads turn real fast.
Okay.
And so you get a couple seconds or something like that, where me, it's going to be there forever. So you kind of have to compromise from an egg shape to a rounder front. So it is very hard to do. It's become a lot easier for me to do Snoopy because I, love Snoopy, and I've probably done more of the Snoopy characters, but some of the other things are much harder to do.
Yeah, well, Snoopy, there's certain ways to cheat because his physicality is a little more fluid, a bouncy nose and such like that.
Right.
So, you can get away. Yeah. You can do things with that.
Yeah, but I remember one sculpture that I wanted to make, though, and I was in Sparky's office, and I was telling him, I said, I'd really like to do the happy dance. Now, you can draw multiple feet, and you can draw lines around him expressing that he's got movement, but how do I do it? And I said, the only way that I can really think about doing it would be to make it and then mount it onto a spring. It only, you'd have the movement of each leg, mm-hmm. but then it would be mounted onto a spring, and then that would be attached to a base. It'd have to be a real heavy-duty spring, though, too, so that the bronze would be, most of my bronzes weigh about 25 pounds.
Oh, my.
And so, this would have to have a nice spring, but then I thought about bringing the grass up around it to hide then the spring to still give it some movement, but it was something that never got done, but I always wanted to, so yeah.
Yeah, that does sound like a step or two beyond what things could take, but... That would be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah.
So what is the process when you're faced with a new sculpture? Do you start with drawings? Do you build something out of clay?
Well,
what was the process?
I'm always completely inspired by Charles Schulz's art, mm-hmm. and I may look through In the old days, we had pose books. Then everything went digital. I'm not a computer person, so for me to sit in front of the computer and go through all these opening files and closing files, much easier for me when they had the pose book just to flip through the pages and be inspired by some of this. And one in particular, in the very beginning, was the little scuba diver. I just thought the expression that he had on that face of his and these eyes bugging out, that I always wanted to do that sculpture. And that was one of the ones I had initially done when I became a licensee in sterling silver. And Sparky just really loved it. And in fact, he commented many times how he liked how I mixed the cartoon characters with realistic things. Mm-hmm. So that had starfish and coral, and then we did an etch glass scene behind it with bubbles coming up where it would have come from the tank, and fish swimming around in kelp, and etc.
Oh, that's great.
So I always told him that I wanted to do that again sometimes in a much larger bronze, and then I did. And he really liked the things that I did. That's all I can say. I mean, it was the icing on the cake always when he would compliment me on something or write me a letter about it. And I was so fortunate to have been able to receive so many compliments from him, you know.
Yeah, well, that has a great bronze. The expressiveness of the ears and, yes, and all that's going on is wonderful in that one.
Yes, yes.
I'm sculpture stupid.
Okay.
Obviously, if you're working in a bronze, you're making a mold, you're building a mold around something. How is it done?
Well, initially, I just normally start with a block of wax.
Okay.
Depending on the size of it, if it's much bigger, then we have to do something to keep the weight down. But up until a certain point, I just normally start off with a block of wax, mm-hmm, and I just start sculpting away. Most people think I do drawings first, but I don't. I just have it all in my head, and I'm inspired, and I surround myself with artwork from Sparky.
Yeah, I was just looking at his collection, folks. He's got some beautiful Sunday originals. I'm envious. I didn't point the other, say, look at that over there, and try to stuff one in my shirt. It wouldn't work, but the temptation was still there. But yeah.
Yes. I was very fortunate, actually. Sparky gave me about 10 original strips. In fact, the one in my office above the door, I don't think you saw it yet, but that was the one that appeared on my birthday, where he did 5 panels of Snoopy on a daily, and which would be really kind of rare, mm-hmm, I think, a thing to have 5 panels in a daily. But yeah, I know. I was very, very fortunate. And I have stacks of letters from him regarding the sculptures and stuff that I've done.
So do it in wax.
Yes. I carve wax initially, and a lot of people don't know that I actually do the casting of the metal myself up until a certain size. And I was quite surprised when we did the tours here a couple of years ago for the Beagle Fest. We, had the shop set up so they could have a greater understanding of what I go through to make these pieces. And so many people came up to me and said, I didn't know that you cast the metal yourself. They just thought I did the original maybe in clay and then it was sent off somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I do my own molding, my own casting, my own finishing work. When we did the sterling silver sculptures, every single one of those were done by me without any assistance at all. I was telling Scott this morning that I said, everyone basically is an artist proof, although we are serial numbering them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, get back to the process. We carve it out of wax the way that I do it. I carve it out of wax, and then it goes into an investment plaster where the larger pieces are dipped into a shell. We put basically like an opened-end can over this piece with a rubber bottom, and the piece is suspended. We mix up a plaster that's the same stuff dentists used to use called dense ply.
Mm-hmm.
It's poured over the piece, and it's put inside of a vacuum chamber that has springs, and it shakes. You're shaking it as it's pulling the vacuum, so it'll pull the bubbles away. And the reason for this is if a bubble is attached to that wax, the metal's also going to fill into that area, and mm-hmm, it's going to be very, very hard to grind or polish
Snoopy
away.
You'll have measles.
It won't be measles. It'll be the opposite. It'll be gigantic air bubbles over the piece. And if it's in a face area or it's on a line of his mouth or something, well, you'll have to scrap that piece or mm-hmm, either really do a lot more work to it to try to save it.
Yeah.
And then all castings always have porosity. Some might be very minute, but I go back and I try to take out as much as I possibly can. I'll drill out small areas using drill bits that are not much bigger than a hair sometimes. And then I'll put in what we call a ball burr, so it mushrooms on the other end, and then I'll actually pound in metal, and then I'll silver solder it over, and then it starts from grinding and polishing. So I try to minimize all that so we have a real smooth surface to everything. Back to the whole thing, after it's cast in metal, it goes through a whole bunch of acid baths. I kind of skipped over here. After the investment, which is putting it into the vacuum chamber and pouring it over, it is allowed to dry, and then the rubber is peeled off the bottom, and there's a little clay thing that we use to suspend it. Now, that is dug out. When that's dug out, it actually creates a funnel area for which the metal is going to flow.
Okay,
so then this is set in a kiln upside down on tiles to raise it, and it's burnt out. So you bring it up to about 2,000 degrees, and everything, including any residue left from that wax, should be burned out at 2,000 degrees. And it leaves a perfect cavity from which the metal is going to flow into it then.
Okay.
Now, in doing some of this, you have to do calculations so that you can figure how much metal you're going to need for the force going in, so you'll have an excess, because if you don't have enough, then it won't fill it all the way and you'll lose it. Now, if you're doing this on the initial one, you're going to lose that 100 or so hours, or maybe even more, in doing that first one. So you want to make sure that you're really accurate. And then the other thing is, you've got to be very crucial of the temperature, because a lot of the times, like with the Snoopy fishing one, that pole is actually cast in place with his hand. And I've had a lot of guys say, that's so hard to do. Mm-hmm. Why would I do it that way? Well, it's because I want to have the fingers looking real nice holding onto the pole, where most guys would just have a hole there.
And then stick it in
and add solder, and then you wouldn't see the little fingers that he has. And so that's a little bit harder piece to do. You have to have the temperature and be very fast with doing it, because it would freeze out basically before the metal would flow all the way out to the end of the fishing pole. Mm-hmm. It might get so cold that it just stops. And those little eyelets are actually cast into place on the fishing pole too, for to add the wire later for the fish.
Well, you're clearly willing to put an awful lot of effort into getting it right, and that
I do try to.
Yeah, that is. There's the creativity level, and then there's the okay.
Yeah,
I put in the time, and that is great. And you've worked on everything from jewelry-sized items to this tribute in Santa Rosa.
Right, the memorial bronze that's on the base. It's about 6 foot tall, with Charlie Brown and Snoopy in the town square there at Depot Park Railroad Square.
Yeah, that's quite a piece. You mentioned to me before that the actual design of that didn't quite take as long as some of the mid-size items.
Yeah, actually, the dreaming sculpture that I did for the 60th anniversary took a lot more hours into carving the original wax. I don't normally keep track of the actual polishing times in doing these things, but I normally always keep track of how many hours it takes to make that original first one.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, the wax took 640 hours. Now, in doing the large bronze for the city of Santa Rosa, going back and forth with the city was the hardest part, because we're working with committees and we're having to even bring out, believe it or not, seismic engineers to see if that's going to be okay to put there. And as long as we keep it underneath a certain height, then we were able to do that. But if we get much over 6 foot tall, then there's a problem. So we have to do a whole bunch of other things at that point. So we try to keep it down.
Well, I guess they got to take it seriously. They're planning for that thing to be there for a long time.
That will
hopefully outlive all of us.
Well, I don't think that it'll move at all. There's stainless steel rods that are threaded into the base that go down about 18 inches through the granite, then into the basalt, and it's all cemented in place. So
that is.
Unless it's centered right there, the earthquake, I don't think it's going to budge much.
Mm-hmm. Barkey liked your work. You were mentioning he had a couple of pieces on his drawing table.
Yeah, he kept one there. He actually kept, I think, a couple in his private office, which, if you've ever been there, he didn't really keep Snoopy objects in the area where he drew or anything like that.
No, a lot of books and other things.
I think he had a sculpture of Lincoln there and a few other things, a lot of books. And anyway, he kept the one there, and he wrote me a letter about it and told me he was going to keep it on his desk with great pride. And he also called me one day before I received this letter, saying he put it there because when he was through drawing on the regular draftsman type board, that he takes the finished drawing and puts it over on a table next to him. And in that time that he looks over there, he's able to see the sculptures and enjoy it for a little few seconds. And when he called me and told me this, I thought it was so strange, because two of the strips that he had given me, I keep above the doors going in and out of my office. And when I'm called out of the shop for any reason to go to the office, I always look up and enjoy them coming both ways. And I always wanted to tell him that, but he beat me to the punch. So, in telling me that he did basically the same thing with the sculptures.
And among other things, you designed the Sparky Award.
Correct. Yeah, the Sparky Award that's named after Charles M. Schulz. I was telling him the concept that I wanted to do. He thought it was wonderful. I did a lot of research trying to find an old-style inkwell. That's one thing that I like to do, and he would also comment on. I go down to libraries and, you know, look as much as I can at different things. I thought that would be a really nice inkwell to go with it, where most of them are kind of plain. So I did that. And then the signature actually on that one in particular, though, I did.
Okay.
Now, he said I did such a great job in doing that signature that I could sign for him, but I didn't get it in writing, see?
Oh.
So, I mean, I don't go about doing that anymore. But on the retired bronze, that is the one, when I took it up for him to see it in wax, that he liked it so well that he actually carved his name into the back of it, and which inspired me to come back and do something more than I originally had in my mind to do. But I'm trying to keep the cost down for collectors. Mm-hmm. And I came back and spent another 4 months designing a rug that had the 12 different characters down into the design for the rest of the Snoopy with the feet up on an ottoman to sit on. And so it came together as a really nice piece. But
That sounds sweet. Now, as a sculptor, you mainly work with Charlie Brown and Snoopy. Is there another character that you associate with?
I associate with a lot of... I love Pigpen, but how do you sculpt it?
That'd be tough.
There you go. I mean, you can do some scratches on his face to make it look like he's dirty, but how do you make a dust cloud? I've always had the privilege to work with Sparky closely, so I would ask a lot of questions. Oh, how would you do this? And he'd sometimes say, I don't know how I would do it. Or I'd be working on something, I'd ask him if he could give me an eight-angle drawing, because, you know, what we call a turnabout.
Mm-hmm.
And he would tell me a story about when he was in his father's barbershop as a kid. Someone came in there and wanted to hire him to do a turnabout drawing, and he said he couldn't do it. He doesn't think in that complete dimensional thing. It's more 2D.
And you can't complain about that, because what he did
what he did was
work, but yeah, it wasn't
the best in the world.
What you did.
And his wit was absolutely incredible. But I feel, like I said, privileged that he liked my work the way that it did. To go back, just to explain to you a little bit more about the casting, when the pieces come out in sterling silver, people don't understand. They're not shiny at all, and they're not smooth at all. They come out kind of with a coarseness of a sandpaper, and they go through several different acid baths, hot acid baths, hydrofluoric, and then we actually strip them with a very caustic chemical that is cyanide. Mixed with...
Okay, so this man is submitting Snoopy to acid and cyanide. He's a very mean, horrible man.
And if he lives through that, then we're doing good, you know? So anyway, he always lives through that. But anyway, it makes them kind of come out looking like aluminum initially, and then it's all the sanding and polishing that I try to make them look like jewelry. And that's what I've tried to tell people. I spend the time to do so much more handwork than I think a lot of people would, but I was trained, you know, pretty much as a high-end jeweler.
Makes sense. Where'd you get your training?
Well, actually, kind of self-trained. I should say my aunt was the one that encouraged me to start working in wax. I was working in clay quite often, and she would come on over after church on Sundays and stuff and said, why do you kill yourself working in clay? Because I was working in water-based clay, and I'd start sometimes on Friday and end up on Sunday doing these Snoopy sculptures. And they were really, really hard to do, and they didn't have as great of clays as they do now to work with. In those days, you'd run across little pebbles and graininess that you're trying to add details to the piece, and your tool hits something like that, and then it drags through. You have to smooth that whole area again and then try to add back the detail. Anyway, she said, why don't you try working in wax? And she brought me a piece of wax, and I start carving it, and I just found that I could get such greater detail that I never went back to doing anything like that. That's why I love wax. I know a lot of my other sculptor friends that work for other different companies still work in clay, and I've tried to explain to them, and they just say it's just too hard for them. And I'm glad that I kind of self-trained myself to work in these things just by using to tell you the truth, when I first started doing it, I was using a baby food jar from my daughter where I punched a hole through it and bought a wick at the hardware store and filled it with denatured alcohol, and then I'd heat up the ceramic tools so that I could carve. Another thing that gave me great encouragement at that time, actually, was I saw a sculpture done by another Polish sculptor, actually, like me, Philip Kraskowski, who was known for doing a lot of wildlife sculpture. And he had done this sculpture of Mickey and Pluto, and I wrote him, not really complimenting him in a way, I guess. I guess I was really straightforward. I said, I love the way you did your Pluto. I don't like the Mickey. And he says, do you think you can do better? So I re-sculpted it just like he did with the Pluto the same way, mm-hmm. but I did the Mickey, and he was the one that actually encouraged me to continue on. And so I did a couple things for Disney, and then when I was invited to meet Charles Schulz, I was just completely taken with him in the fact that he would allow me not only to do the sculptures, but allow me to design the boxes and design the certificates of authenticity and add whatever things that I wanted to make that collectible extra special.
Yeah, well, that is present. Well, obviously, if you're doing sculpture in the first place, that is presentation. But the presentation surrounding that should right. live. If you can make that live up to the object, that's all
right.
the better.
Well, the one box that I did, which is the black and gold embossed box, he kept in his office, and he used to tell me that more people came in there and took photographs of that than anything. And I just thought that was great. I spent a lot of money on that box. It actually cost me over $25,000, not counting to do the first printing run of it, a little over $25 a box. And we had to meet the minimums, we had to do a little over 1,000. That did not include the embossing plates or the hot gold foil stamping plates. But when we donated one or two of these to auctions for charities and stuff, people pay $500 for an empty box. So it's kind of,
So, yeah.
Everything's a learning curve, you know. Everybody thinks that in packaging it's really always really cheap. With the first series of little sterling silver sculptures that I did, which we only made 100 of them, but there was 100 of each pose, mm-hmm. there were still several thousand component parts made in order to end up with that. The box I decided to do showing all five designs just reappearing in creating a pattern, not really understanding that when we submitted this to approval, that even though a lid pulls apart, that we still have to have a hidden copyright line in there. And I also wanted to put Schulz, mm-hmm. giving him credit for it on the top of the box. So we actually had to make a couple different printing things for that. It becomes expensive, let's put it that way, when you're doing short runs, what we call short runs.
So, I believe it.
But I enjoyed doing it so much and putting the product out there rather than putting it in a plain white box.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you're working on at the moment?
Actually, I'm just trying to finish up old projects of things I've always wanted to do.
Oh, that's great.
When I did the first sterling silver series in 1992, I always wanted to paint a set or two of them. And in the beginning of this summer, I found that the paint I've been using for different projects like this was discontinued. And so I took it upon myself to really push forward and paint this. And one of them was the little scuba diver. That was the first one I really wanted to do because it had the starfish and all the shells.
A lot of transfer color there.
A lot of details and a lot of different colors to put into it and painting the tank and everything else. So I started with that, and I just decided that I wanted to paint a couple more sets. So I think I ended up doing three sets. And then the less amount of white that I had, which is the crucial part that I needed for painting Snoopy,
yeah.
I ended up just painting, I believe it was four or five of the little miniature where he's holding a bouquet of flowers. And he's so small that if you put the bases on these, two of them won't stretch across the diameter of a dime.
Ooh.
And I sent the pictures up to Jeannie. And initially, many years ago, it was done in 18-karat gold for Charles Schulz as a little Christmas gift that I did for him inside of a little glass dome. Unfortunately, these were lost when the home was burnt to the ground.
Yeah.
I recently also learned from Jeannie about some of the other sculptures that they had at the house there, but Sparky with the retired sculpture with him, Snoopy, sitting in the chair, when he initially had it and I was up at the house and saw it, he had it in the kitchen area and he told me that when he got home from work, he would see it every day. Mm-hmm. But Jeannie told me in this last letter that he moved it next to his nightstand. So that was really an extraordinary compliment to me, that too, is. That he kept it right next to the bed.
Well, I suppose I should tie things up now. I'm not a very good interviewer.
A very good person to interview.
Oh, no, you've been great. But is there anything I should have asked you that I haven't?
Oh, gosh, with my memory? Well, I could go on to tell you stories for days on end about all the things that Sparky and I have done together. I was very fortunate to have been invited with him when he returned home to his boyhood home back in St. Paul, Minneapolis, for the 45th year. We had lunch at which would have been his father's barber shop at one time at O'Gara's, which is a restaurant pub there now.
Okay.
Someone leaked it to the press, so before we could finish and go out the front door, there was such a crowd there that he wanted to avoid it. So I said, well, let's just go out through the kitchen. And so we went out through the kitchen, and he and I believe it was his grandson, we were walking along, and he noticed the back stairway that used to go up to the apartment. So I said, well, don't you want to go up there while you're here? And he says, mm-hmm. Now? And I said, well, sure. When are we going to be here next? Right. I mean, so I walked back inside and I got the keys and we were taken on up there by the busboy who lived there now. And the guy wasn't prepared at all to let us in.
Yeah.
He had, a few clothes thrown here and there. And I felt, this poor guy, kind of allowing us in there. The first thing that came out of Sparky's mouth, though, was, boy, this place is so much smaller than I remember. And I turned to him and said, well, you were probably only about 3 foot high when you were here last.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the busboy asked Sparky if he could draw on the wall and tried to hand him a ballpoint pen. Sparky took the pen and he looked at it kind of oddly and he says, well, even if I wanted to or something to this effect, I wouldn't be able to with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always on the side of the collector. I don't know if you know that. I always, when someone asks something like that, Sparky and I would be out to lunch and say, oh, Sparky, come on, do it. But anyway, he says, I can't do it with a ballpoint pen. So I said, I have a Sharpie in my camera case.
Oh, ho.
I opened it up and I handed it. The other thing I knew about Sparky on a more personal level, he didn't really like to be photographed from the back. I don't know why. He just didn't like to be photographed from the back while he was drawing. But I thought, this is historic, what mm-hmm. he's doing here at his boyhood home. So I proceeded to take pictures of him actually while he's drawing it. Tried not to take too many,
right.
But every few seconds or so I'd take a picture. And then when he was all through, he was starting to turn to me and I says, give me a good smile. And he was capping the Sharpie. And I was literally praying because I'm used to only really doing close-up photography. Now, we're talking, this is long before digital cameras, too. This is adjusting an aperture on a 35-millimeter camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that it doesn't get milky from taking the shot, which is how very often it happens to me when I'm doing a shot like that. It came out wonderful.
Great.
I mean, it came out perfect, and he was very pleased with it. And I sent one back to O'Gara's pub and everything else. But yeah, I was so thrilled with that. So I took that Sharpie that he handed back to me, put a piece of tape on it, and it's been on my desk all these years ever since.
Okay. So an official Snoopy came out of this.
Yeah. That's just one of the many stories that I could go on and tell you probably for days about Sparky and I's little adventures here and there. Yeah. So
I hope that everyone enjoyed that interview. It was conducted in person outside Stan Studio in Long Beach, California. Those occasional noises you heard were not, alas, the rushing surf, but merely local traffic, which was much closer. And I'd really like to thank not only Stan for being so generous with his time, but also Scott Allen Blanchard for setting up this meeting. He'd been riding on me for a while to meet Stan, and I'm glad I did. I'd like to thank all of you who are listening for making this all worthwhile. And for those of you who aren't listening, no thanks for you. Of course, they won't hear this, but you can tell them that if they want thanks, all they have to do is listen, and the thanks is theirs. And hey, if you did listen, let me know what you thought. Email all comments, complaints, concerns, questions, and suggestions to questions@augh.com. That's AAUGH.com. And be sure to stop by the blog at blog.augh.com for the latest in Peanuts news. And until next time, may you treat each day as part of the special limited edition that it is. May you always follow your acid bath with only the highest quality cyanide. And may all your griefs be good ones.